After a month of war between Israel and Hamas, maybe you've seen horrific images of people worried if their families will get home safely, people digging out from bombings, clutching their loved ones. Thousands of children have died in Gaza alone, according to the area's health ministry. Let's talk with poet and former human rights worker Priscilla Worthington about how she's tried to find the words to contextualize conditions for Palestinians. She's a Palestinian-American and is based in the Bay Area. Her latest chapbook came out in 2021. Priscilla, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with your chapbook, Paper and Stick. That title is really interesting. What does the title mean?
So the title has something to do with the notion of a donkey with a carrot and the stick on either end. So one side lures him to go forward and the other side beats him. So this donkey is incentivized both positively and negatively. It also has something to do with the permit regime and this sort of paper empire that Palestinians live under. It's described really well by Israeli scholar Yael Barta in her book, Living Emergency, for folks who are interested in learning more. And it also had something to do with my own personal work and what I was doing in documents in my capacity as a human rights and humanitarian advocacy consultant.
You know, I'd love you just to tell us briefly about that paper, the permit system, because I think, you know, we don't really know or understand what that is, or really more importantly, how that impacts everyday Palestinians.
Once Israel formally took over and began its military administration of the West Bank, all of the Palestinians living there fell under military law, fell under military orders. And so what that meant was that every sort of aspect of their life was now controlled through a military system, but not just a military system that's to do with trucks and weapons, but also a military system that's operating as a bureaucracy. Because, of course, the civilian population continues to live, continues to give birth and get married and need jobs. And so this sort of military bureaucratic system becomes the mechanism that they have to go through in order for those things to be functional in their lives. You know, I sort of call it, you know, in my own mind, the sort of ho-hum of occupation, the sort of everyday military occupation. You know, so for example, Israel manages and holds the Palestinian population registry. So anytime a child is born, that has to be reported to Israel. You know, if there's a marriage, that has to be reported. And if people want to move to where their spouses, and one person has one type of ID and another person has another type, like, for example, a Jerusalem and a West Bank, they're going to have to negotiate this permit regime in order to work out how they can both live in the same location. You know, and Palestinian movement is constantly restricted through checkpoints. And so in order to move around, Palestinians have to apply for permits. There are many Palestinians who work inside of settlements, and they have to apply for permits and work permits and movement permits in order to do that. And, you know, anytime a Palestinian speaks out against the Israeli government or the conditions of their daily existence, they're running the risk of losing access to those permits. And so, you know, that very much mirrors the kind of thinking of the title around a double incentivization, one with a reward, which would be the permit, and one with a sort of punishment, which could be, you know, losing your access to your livelihood or losing the ability to register your child's birth.
Let's talk about some of the poems in Paper and Stick. Would you read Deadline Extended for us?
I would love to. Deadline Extended. As if it were a film rolling in front my eyes, my mother wanted to give me a jacket. Takes the body apart, vein by vein by sinew. They tied me to that chair every time, 15 times, but I never. Only to find the muscle is wood, air that was coming into the cell, Ascalon military court 3 times, for which I pulled shut the blue curtain, Salem military court.
So this is obviously about a military court that you referenced. A lot of your work deals with questions of consent. And Palestinians, and I'm quoting here, are always viewed as either suspects or defendants and are almost always convicted, end quote, according to Israeli human rights group B'Tselem. Tell us what consent could possibly mean in that context.
You know, this poem has two voices in it, and one of the voices in this poem was directly from the work I was doing, was from a detained Palestinian child who is describing a very kind of frequent and ordinary detention experience. And I use those words with great sadness to say that these kinds of experiences are frequent and common. And so what kind of consent does this child have to be interrogated and to speak? This child is going to be and was interrogated without the presence of an adult present, even though they're minor, and basically is going to be forced to, one way or another, be found guilty of something. As you mentioned, the conviction rate of the military courts in Israel is 99%. So whether the child confesses to some sort of crime, whether or not they, you know, independently say that they never did anything, or whether they don't, they're still going to be found guilty. So what does speech really mean in that situation? And I know you've asked me a question and I've returned it to you sort of as a question, because these are sort of impossible questions to give final answers to.
You know, there's so much pressure, especially on Palestinians right now, to talk about what they're going through in a specific way, or speak about violence that's really unspeakable in some ways. You've also worked in human rights, so you've been talking about conditions in Gaza and the West Bank for a long time. Maybe things people are just learning about now. Are you experiencing this pressure, especially given that you're a poet?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a very grievous moment. I'm reeling myself from the horrifying news, and more horror keeps happening. So it's not like something in the past tense that I'm now, you know, separate from and analyzing. It's continuous. And even, you know, in those times before and after these particular events and this particular violence, that has been the case, that the Palestinian suffering is ongoing and continuous. It is a sort of extended, long-term, unsolved emergency. And yes, there is absolutely a pressure to speak, because permission for these ongoing atrocities are really created through silence or through the fear of saying very much and a desire to kind of keep statements extremely bland. And so there is incredible pressure to speak and to speak well and to speak accurately and without the sort of the bumpy quality of a suffering human voice.
And in this moment, how does art, how does poetry maybe speak in a different way than, say, political speech or other kinds of speech? How do you feel as a poet in these moments?
I feel that art has an ability to ask us all to think about consciousness itself. You know, what are the conditions in which we allow or don't allow ourselves to imagine things? What are the conditions that allow us to start to see a human as monstrous rather than human? What are the conditions of our language itself, English, which of course has become a kind of colonial language, wiping out other languages around the world? I think art has the capacity to intervene in some way against discourse and paradigms that really exist only in language, and to ask us to look again and see things again from a sort of shifted position of the heart.
We've been talking with Priscilla Wellington. She's a poet in the Bay Area. She's Palestinian American, and her latest chapbook is Paper and Stick. Priscilla, thank you so much.
Thank you, Deepa.
And we have more views and analysis of the conflict at npr.org/Mideast Updates.